Over the past 2.5 years, top secret information about National Security Agency surveillance, leaked by ex-NSA contractor Edward Snowden, has scandalized the world. But within the trove was buried a smaller story, a human one, rich with irony, paradox, and even some pathos. It concerns an NSA employee given the job as house philosopher of electronic surveillance. Investigative reporter Peter Moss did some surveillance of his own and was able to track down the philosopher whom he profiled recently for The Intercept. Peter, welcome back to the show.
Great to be with you.
How did you come to learn of the existence of this column, which is called the SIGINT Philosopher, SIGINT standing for Signals Intelligence?
About a year and a half ago, I was in Berlin working with Laura Poitras on the Snowden Archive. Laura was one of the journalists to whom Edward Snowden leaked his trove of documents. Then I started stumbling across these in-house columnists that the NSA had for their own consumption, writing about grammar, writing about manners, and then also writing about the philosophy of surveillance, about why to do it, perhaps why not to do it. This was the SIGINT Philosopher columnist, and I was really surprised to see somebody writing as colorfully, as accessibly, as emotionally as this fellow was.
Now, he is a very reflective guy, and one who is clearly on a kind of intellectual or philosophical journey of his own that has wound up with a philosophy that total surveillance actually protects us individually and as a society. How did he get there?
NSA employees, like other employees in the intelligence community, have to regularly, or most of them regularly, have lie detector tests. He was really nervous during it, and he realized that there were probably times when the needle jumped, and that probably marked him out as being suspicious. And he realized that actually, if only the examiner knew everything about his life, the examiner would understand, oh yes, this is why the needle jumped. He isn't trying to hide something. It's just a sensitive subject for him. No problem. And so as a result of that, the SIGINT philosopher concluded that it would be best for all of us if the polygraph examiners of our lives, the government that is, knows everything about us, because then there won't be any mistakes made insofar as what we do, what we think, what our motivations are.
So while you had what you described in your piece as the ultimate get-out-of-guilt-free card, you chose not to invoke it.
I felt I had a get-out-of-guilt-free card for conducting surveillance on him, because this is precisely what he was suggesting the government should do to us. One of the things that I was able to find out about was what his phone number was. So I called him up at home, and one of the first things he said to me is, you know, look, you can't use my name. I don't want you writing the story. I found that very ironic, because he is all about total surveillance, so why not him?
By the time you actually were calling him, you knew quite a bit about his backstory.
I had not only found out where he was born and how many times he was married and when he got divorced, where he lived and where he'd gone to school and what his son's name and what his dog's name was and seen pictures of him, but also his blog about his previous and resumed career as a fiction writer. It turned out that he had attended a graduate writing program and had gotten, as most writers do, a lot of rejection letters from publishers saying, no, your work's not good enough. He had become so kind of alienated by the experience that he turned away from it. He burned all the manuscripts he had. He stopped reading literature, and he joined the NSA. It made me feel closer to him in a way, I suppose, because he may not have published a lot, but he considers himself a writer. I am a writer like him. I know what it's like to feel that, you know, your genius may not be as appreciated by the rest of the world as you'd like.
And while he may have not found a whole mess of editors who were champing at the bit to publish his work, he did find a patron, his Medici. It just happened to be the super secret government security apparatus.
He returned to writing fiction about a year or so after he began writing the SIGINT Philosopher columns. And it's total speculation on my part, but I have a hard time not seeing a connection between him finding a new audience at the NSA and realizing that, hey, this actually is what I want to do. And in fact, on his blog, he referenced the fact that when he thought he might lose his job at the NSA, the one thing he really wanted to do in the rest of his life was write.
Now, you go to the trouble in your piece to observe that he is not like those fictional characters who are caught up as operatives in a system that they morally despise. He's not Winston Smith from 1984. He's not the Gene Hackman character, Harry Call, in The Conversation. He has bought in to the NSA's mission. accepting that the surveillance society has its benefits?
I think it's kind of an interesting new, you know, postmodern twist in the archetype of the literary eavesdropper. I mean, the NSA, I think, its ideology is somewhat totalist, collect it all, everything. And the SIGINT philosopher is kind of a personal representation of that. The more the better, the more that is collected on innocent people, the better not just for the government, but for them. It's not very subtle, unlike, you know, these kind of literary eavesdroppers of other eras. You know, we talk about Harry Call from The Conversation. You know, you talk about George Smiley, John le Carré's creation. These are all characters who actually, I think, saw problems and subtleties of the systems that they were operating in. The SIGINT philosopher does not see those subtleties, at least does not express them. He's kind of all in on surveillance.
He did a column in 2012 observing that had he been advising Abraham Lincoln in the days leading up to the Civil War, he would have told him, no, no, don't go to war over the secession of the South. And, you know, he lists three or four perfectly pragmatic reasons why it's doomed to failure. In all good faith, he would have given him the worst advice ever. And he says, so he's not so quick to judge his superiors on the basis of a policy that he understands that he might misunderstand.
Yes, he's got a point. You know, if you talk to any mid-level official in virtually any government department, whether it's in the intelligence community or elsewhere, half of what they do is gripe. They gripe about everybody else above them and around them not being right. And it would be kind of chaotic if every mid-level official who disagreed with policy went to the nearest journalist. But at the same time, individuals have more rights than perhaps the government might want to credit them with. The individuals might have more wisdom than the government credits them with. And there are other policies to which full-throttle dissent and leaking would be very justified and would be kind of a tragedy if a mid-level official just says, nope, okay, I'm going to let the government go ahead and do its bay of pigs.
Peter, as always, thank you so much.
Thank you, Bob.
Peter Maas is a senior editor at The Intercept.
Coming up, a thought experiment about what might happen if we take our current political culture to its logical extreme.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome President of the United States, Donald Trump.
This is On the Media.
This is Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, the Science Friday team has been reporting high-quality science and technology news, making science fun for curious people by covering everything from the outer reaches of space to the rapidly changing world of AI to the tiniest microbes in our bodies. Audiences trust our show because they know we're driven by a mission to inform and serve listeners first and foremost with important news they won't get anywhere else. And our sponsors benefit from that halo effect. For more information on becoming a sponsor, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.